Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Katie Galley, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio, and this is going to be a fun one, Katie.
Yeah, I'm really excited for the guests that we have in the studio. And first up on Atlanta Business Radio this morning, we have Baker Donaldson, attorney at law and executive director of cybersecurity, Justin Daniels.
Welcome, Justin.
Thank you. Pleased to be here.
So now Baker Donaldson decided to invest some resources in a cybersecurity accelerator. Can you talk a little bit about why you guys did that and why it's important?
Sure. The investment in the accelerator was the wider investment in helping to create the awareness of the cybersecurity ecosystem that exists in the region. In my travels overseas especially, it's become very evident that there's just a real lack of awareness of all the ingredients that we have in this region that make it an excellent ecosystem. So the accelerator is a key component of that awareness because companies, particularly international ones, it provides a very efficient, cost-effective way to embed themselves in our ecosystem and see what it is we have to offer.
Now, what are some of the ingredients that make Atlanta unique?
The ingredients that make Atlanta unique, I will start with our CyberTrain workforce. We have multiple universities, including Georgia Tech, Georgia State, Kennesaw State, as well as others who have cyber-specific degree programs. So we churn out a ton of great graduates who already have cyber-specific skills. So that's a great cyber-trained workforce, to work for companies or if they want to go after their own dreams. We also have a very robust base of Fortune 1000 companies that provide a great enterprise client base. We also have Cyber Command, which is going to be the Army's preeminent place for cyber, as well as the $50 million investment that the state of Georgia has made in Augusta in the cyber range. And so when you put all these ingredients together in one region, you really have something that's pretty special, but it's up to us as a community to really speak with a unified voice.
Now, how important is it that Atlanta also is home to a lot of the large fintech organizations and the large healthcare IT organizations?
That's critical because both financial services and healthcare are components of what we'll call our critical infrastructure, how you get your healthcare, financial transactions. And so in those two industries, we've already seen two of the biggest risks they now have is cybersecurity, because cybersecurity is a risk that overlays every single industry. There's no escape from it. And so that in part is what makes it very unique.
And then that contributes to Atlanta having vested interest in being involved in this and getting it right.
Absolutely, particularly in light of our strength in fintech. That is one area where we are starting to get notoriety, especially being known as Transaction Alley. So,
What does Transaction Alley mean?
Transaction Alley, when you talk to different people, I think essentially what it means is 75 to 80% of the world's payment processing somehow touch or go through Atlanta, because you have this critical mix of companies here, Global Payments, WorldPay, First Data, among others, that all call Atlanta home.
And then can you talk a little bit, kind of maybe for the layperson, about cybersecurity? It's not that teenage hacker with a hoodie, you know, typing in some cafe right in Europe somewhere. That's not what's happening.
No, we've come a long way from...
Since Matthew Broderick,
that's
right?
That's exactly what I was going to say. No, what we're dealing with now is a very complicated, multifaceted problem. You'll hear about blockchain, you'll hear about bots, and as you all are aware, you know, cybersecurity also impacts geostrategic relations and in politics, with nation states being involved in it. It is nothing like what we saw back in war games, although there is some element of that. Cybersecurity touches every aspect of your life, from work to play. It even touches our democratic form of government.
And when you say that the scope of the problem is vast, you're talking about some maybe groups this is like their job, right? This is like they're going into office buildings with briefcases, just like people do here in America, except they're just trying to find clever ways to get into other people's cyber business.
I think it takes on very different shapes. You know, back in the 19th century, you know, you robbed a stagecoach. Now no one uses a gun or anything. They use a keyboard from a computer in some potential country far away. And one part is they look simply to steal things. But other parts are industrial espionage is another aspect of it. Another aspect of it is the political aspect, as we've seen several elections that have had the influence of potential cyber hacks impacting the outcome in multiple different countries. So you have the economic part, you have the political part, and yes, you have the good old fashioned, instead of robbing the bank, I'm going to steal from it using a computer.
But I'm trying to get to the point of this is very organized. Like these people are working together in mass. They're whiteboarding stuff out. They're brainstorming. This is treated like it's a business.
Oh, yes.
But just at the scope of, you know, they're just trying to do kind of bad stuff.
Yes, you will have crime syndicates. You'll have what they now call the dark web. There are very sophisticated, very intentional people getting together to figure out how they can use computers and our technology for crime.
Now, you guys are right now, we're about to kick off Atlanta Cyber Week at Georgia Tech, I guess, at the kickoff a little later today. Can you talk a little bit about that? What can someone expect from attending this?
So Atlanta Cyber Week is a informal public-private collaboration that's designed to really bring awareness to the pillars of our ecosystem in this region. So people who attend the different events, there's great education, there's great networking opportunities. Not only will you meet people who are very knowledgeable from inside the United States, but there'll be people who are coming to Atlanta Cyber Week from Israel, the UK, Canada, especially for CyberCon, the event that we run. There's a very international flavor to what we're doing. So what you can hope to get if you're a entrepreneur or have a cyber company is one, potential access at multiple events to the chief information security officer, who's typically the person who makes the buying decision for large Fortune 1000 companies that we have. But also, it's great opportunities to network with people from different countries who may have different ideas, and also to get opportunities to be in front of our Cybertrain workforce and see all the different ingredients, as I alluded to earlier, that make our ecosystem so unique.
Now, at this event, is this going to be, it's primarily education, or is there opportunities to actually ask questions to the experts? Like, what's going to be the format of the different things that are happening?
So every event is a little bit different, and each group is tasked with operating its own event under the umbrella of Atlanta Cyber Week. So for example, today, I know at ATDC, they're going to have an event with some CISOs, and that's for startups to go and learn more about concerns that CISOs have and things like that.
What's a CISO?
Chief Information Security Officer. That is the person who's typically charged in various titles, but that's usually what it is, who protects the security of an organization and their systems.
So now, so they're going to be just kind of educating the public about what's going on, and there'll be an opportunity for people to ask them questions specific to whatever their needs are?
Yes, there will. And then at CyberCon, which is on Wednesday, which is the conference we've run that's now in its third year, it's really two conferences in one. We'll have experts and panels and things like that. But we also have a pitch component where 12 companies have been selected from around the world to pitch to the entire audience their technology and cybersecurity. And then they will get a private lunch with the chief information security officers who are in attendance, and we'll have about 15 to 20 of those from, you know, some very well-recognized brands in Atlanta.
So now at CyberCon, you have a pretty impressive keynote speaker. You want to talk about that?
So this year's keynote speaker is Nadav Zafrir, and he is from Israel. He helped found their Cyber Command, and he was also the commander of their elite Unit 8200, which is their cyber unit, and that unit has state-of-the-art technology. And what's unique about it is a lot of the military folks who are in that unit and leave it go on to start some very successful companies like Checkpoint. I think Palo Alto is another one. And so that unit is recognized worldwide as the leading edge of cyber. And now he's working for a foundry that helps come up with some of Israel's best ideas that they then make into award-winning companies.
So now, as Baker Donaldson has this accelerator, can you talk about what happens in the accelerator?
Sure. So we just had our fourth company come on board in the last couple of weeks, a company called Witfu. And the accelerator provides the following. We have seven mentors who provide help to the company anywhere from go-to-market strategy to figuring out how best to pitch CISOs or how to price products. We also have opportunities to get interns from places like Georgia Tech or Kennesaw State to work for the company. And then there's also amazing networking opportunities with prospective CISOs when we feel the company is ready and able to go in front of companies. We're able to help facilitate opportunities for that company to get business leads.
So now how does a prospective company get your attention?
We have a website called cybersecurityaccelerator.us. And so they go to that website and they'll fill out an application and we'll review it. And if we're interested, we'll then offer them the opportunity to have a demo in front of the mentors. And then we'll take the demo opportunity to ask a lot of questions. And from that process, we can make a decision if they're a fit. We think we can help them and they meet the criteria that we have for induction into the accelerator.
And then this is something you're running yourself or this is part of your team?
I run it along with some others, and we also have the mentors. So yes, it is an adjunct to my day job.
Now, is this something where that you're giving them a location to work out of as well, or is this something they're kind of on their own and you're just virtually helping them?
Oh, so interestingly enough, we have office space on our 14th floor that is available to them. As it would be, the first four companies happened not to need the office space. They were very interested in the mentoring opportunity and the other aspects of the program. But we do provide office space to those who are interested in that aspect of the program.
Now, how did you get involved in cybersecurity? Was this always your specialty?
No, it is not. Back in November of 2014, I was part of Metro Chamber. We were working on our Gateway program. And I had an opportunity to host a guy by the name of Zohar Zisafel. He's literally the Israeli version of Steve Jobs. And he was here for one day in Atlanta about talking about their connected car and the cybersecurity aspects. And so after spending the day with him, what he said to me was, "You have a great ecosystem here. If you just got the word out, I think a lot of companies might want to come here." And so from that day, I got the idea that spread to CyberCon, then the Accelerator, and then Atlanta Cyber Week. It really all started from there.
So there's a nice plug for the importance of networking at the Metro Chamber. You never know who you're going to meet and what kind of tangent your career will take, right?
That's absolutely right. That's why you get up every day. You just don't know what any day is going to bring.
So now at the event, it goes the whole week, right?
Yes.
It ends on Friday?
Yes, we have 11 total events. There is at least one to two or three events every single day.
And then it's going to end, I guess, towards the end will be your TEDx talk? Or is that top secret? We're not allowed to talk about that?
Nope. There's a website. The brochure is published. Nope, nothing top secret. Yes, that's Friday at the Rialto Theater. It is sold out. And I'm very excited about it. It's an amazing opportunity. And I feel like I have a couple really interesting things to say that I hope will resonate with the audience and the broader one on the internet.
So now at Cyber Week, are there any events that you're looking forward to? Any people you're looking forward to learning more about?
I'm particularly interested in talking about certain issues that I think are important. I think one of those issues are how we can have more meaningful corporate engagement. And what I mean by that is the big thing for emerging growth cyber companies is the ability to get customers or at least get an answer if your product works or if it doesn't, how to tweak it. So one of the issues I want to discuss this week with everyone is how do we have more pilot programs? How do we streamline decision-making processes at large companies to either give companies a chance or say no quickly as opposed to some of what you see now? That would be number one. And then number two, the opportunity to exchange ideas, especially with the international companies, because it's always amazing to me for people internationally who have not been to Atlanta. They're just very impressed and very amazed once they get here and see what we have. It's just the effort you have to expend to get them here.
So now it seems like you've been able to work pretty closely with some Israeli firms in order to get their involvement. Mm-hmm. What are the other countries that are involved?
So this year we'll have companies that are participating or delegations from Israel, the UK, Canada, and Ireland.
And then how do you go about kind of finding them and getting them involved? How do you get the word out to the different, you know, to the world, essentially?
A couple different ways. I've been to Israel once. I've been to London now twice. But the other thing is Atlanta boasts a pretty strong consular corps. So we've been able to work through the consular corps of both of all of those different countries, particularly with the UK and Israel, because we've traveled there and those relationships have evolved over the last 3 years, because this whole undertaking has been a three-year overnight success. So it's just been hard work building relationships to get to this point.
And then when you are working internationally, what's in it for these countries internationally? Why should they get involved in future events?
I think what's in it for them is a lot of international companies come to the U.S. because it's obviously a very large market, but they're not aware of the different opportunities that are open to them. And so, for example, Atlanta has a much lower cost of living than other places they may want to go. Or we have the airport, which is an incredibly efficient way to travel about the country to get to your customers, as well as our cyber-trained workforce. But unless you build that awareness, these businesses are unaware of the opportunities that exist here. And so the more that we do that, the more that they come here, have positive experiences, that then allows them to tell other companies who come, and that helps create a larger, healthier ecosystem in our region.
Now, for you, what is going to be your way of knowing that the week was successful and you'll be high-fiving all the folks back at Baker Donaldson?
I think there'll be some tangibles and intangibles, but I think I think immediately it'll be the excitement that people have about the event. But like everything else, you know, in 2 to 4 to 6 to 8 months, do some of the companies who attend come to Atlanta? Do they have pilot programs here? Do we see more startups and uptick in the opportunities that they get with Fortune 1000 companies in town? If you start to see things like that in the aftermath of the conference over a 3 to 6 month period, I think that would be a pretty good indicator that it's been successful.
Now, are there any tips that you can give to a business to make sure their house is in order regarding cybersecurity?
Talking generally, because every business is specific, but to me, what I see time and time again, the number one problem or challenge that we have in cyber is really the human element. Phishing, with a PH, is one of the biggest instances of cyber attack. And that means how many of us get inundated with emails all day long and not realize that you actually now have to spend 1 to 2 or that extra 3 seconds actually looking at the email to see if it's a legitimate one or not. Because they look so legitimate nowadays, it's much harder to tell. And a lot of those emails can have links that have malware that you don't even realize are getting into your system. So if you ask me, the number one thing that can be doing is being smart, training your workforce to really understand when you're getting email or on the internet, you really have to be careful and be thoughtful in where you're going and what you're doing.
And then what about the importance of having kind of a more robust password than the word password?
That would be helpful, yes. Using capital letters and numbers and other kinds of, yes, that would be highly recommended. Although, I think whatever is going to replace the password, that's a $1 billion business.
Now, you see that coming, that there's going to be a different type of password that might not be, you know, your own memory, limited by your memory.
I think you're seeing that already with two-factor authentication and other ways that people want to authenticate that you are who you claim to be so that you get access to the system. But I think the password is going to shortly be bypassed because of all the things that you alluded to about how it can be broken and how people handle it. I mean, think about it. How many passwords do you have for your banking, your
right.
insurance,
and
at work?
And they want me to change it
right.
like every few months.
You almost need your own program or spreadsheet to keep track of all of your
right.
different
Which
passwords.
Which is vulnerable.
That's
because
right.
then they're all in one place.
Right. So you can already see just in our conversation why right. something will have to replace it. It's just a matter of what it'll be and how commercially viable can it be. Because remember, when you replace something like that that's so, you know, embedded in our culture, it's a big change.
Right. Humans don't do change very well.
No, that's absolutely right.
So now if somebody wanted to learn more about Cyber Week, is there a website for the event?
Sure. You can go to atlcyberweek.com, and at that website, you can click on the schedule of events and you can see all 11 events. And then if you want to learn more about an event, you can click on it and it'll take you exactly to the webpage to learn more about that particular event. And I believe several of the events are still open to register for. There are others that are, in fact, sold out.
And on the website, you can get all that information. And if you're a company that's interested in, you know, being part of your accelerator, the website for that?
That is cybersecurityaccelerator.us.
And if somebody has a cyber need and needs a top law firm in town, Baker Donaldson's coordinates?
Our website is bakerdonaldson.com, but if you get to the accelerator site, you can easily find me there as well.
Good stuff. Well, thank you so much for being part of the show, Justin, and good luck, not that you need it, at your TED Talk later this week.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
All right. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio, we have the Director of Career, Technical, and Post-Secondary Education at the Georgia Department of Corrections, Gary Lister.
Welcome, Gary.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Did you learn anything there? Did Justin scare you?
He did. I need to go change my passwords right now.
See, password was not the best choice, right? In hindsight.
Exactly.
So what do you got going on, Gary?
Oh, we've got a lot going on, and we're always delighted to share the story of how we're trying to prepare people to reenter society and become productive citizens.
So can you talk about how this came about?
Delighted to, yes. Governor Deal had the vision, the dream. He shared that. The General Assembly funded that. The Department of Corrections was given the charge. We were given the what and not the how. And we had to go figure it out. We had to be agile. We had to pivot. We had to have some starts.
It's like a startup. Sounds like a startup.
Exactly. Exactly. It was a startup because it was nothing less than a complete reinvention.
Except the only difference is you didn't lose your house if you failed,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
So now, does this make economic sense? You know, because people have a pretty emotional, you know, when it comes to corrections and bad guys. Do you think like this makes financial sense?
As well they should, because these efforts are funded by the taxpayer. It makes excellent financial sense. There's a strong business case for reforming prison education. In fact, there's been a recent RAND study that says for every $1 you spend, you save $14 by avoiding recidivism, keeping people out, paying taxes. So we're seeing some excellent results. Our premier welding program up at Walker State Prison, a little south of Chattanooga, to date, We've graduated from the welding program and released 200 men. All 200 are working in welding, which is a strategic industry for Georgia. They're making good money. They're paying taxes. They're supporting their family. And for that program, there's a 0% recidivism rate. We're trying hard to maintain that 0%, and we're trying to spread that to our other programs.
So now, are the programs kind of trade-oriented like that? In areas of need?
They are. Number one, we look for a strong connection to post-release employment. We try to support Georgia's strategic industries. We also try to have something for everyone. We've got everything from automotive repair to beekeeping to cosmetology, diesel technology, on up through woodworking and welding. Not completely A to Z yet, but we're working on that.
So now, I guess in some of your free time, you've also written some books. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Oh, sure, I can. I have four books on Amazon. All four have a 5-star review. I'm proud of that. They have few reviews, but the reviews we do have are 5 stars. I was a school board chairman for many years in a little country school district, and it's relatively rare to get an award for effective boardmanship for school boards. But we did. We won a national award from the National School Board Association, and I got to travel around and talk about our results. the Michigan Association of School Boards invited me to come up and talk to them. So I've got a few books on my experiences as a school board member. I've got a book on leadership. And then about the time I was ready to retire, Pearson Education recruited me to do a textbook/field manual on program management. I had been a program manager for many, many years with the Department of Defense. And so that's my books on Amazon.com.
Now, one of the books caught my eye is one, I guess, kind of connected some way with Seth Godin.
Yes. Early on, because you can tell I'm elderly. But early on when Seth was becoming popular, he had blogs, he had webs, he had email lists, and somehow I was connected with Seth. And after he wrote the book Purple Cow, he began a campaign to identify some cows. So he asked people on his blogs, on his email list, if you know someone that's worthy of being named a cow, nominate them or nominate themselves. So anyway, I am a cow, a purple cow in the follow-on book to Purple Cow. It's called 99 Cows, and I think I'm cow number 72 or 74 or something like that.
And then this was based on one of your programs that you were involved with?
I had a long, long career with the Department of Defense, and yes, we were doing some amazing things there. We were doing experiential education to help the workforce recover from the huge, huge workload we had with the Gulf Wars. We almost burned out a lot of equipment. We also almost burned out the workforce because they were working long hours, mandatory overtime, 24/7, trying to maintain the fleet of aircraft. So we needed to find a way to pause, to regroup.
To recharge.
Yes. And so we were recognized for that. And that's why I'm cow number 72.
So now, how can we, you know, recidivism?
Yes. Is that yes, it's one of those hard words.
For me, it's a hard word. How can we create programs where they don't choose crime? Like, how do we nip this before it begins?
There's some good studies. You know, don't take Gary Lister's word.
Look, Seth Godin took your word, so I'm taking your word.
There's a strong connection to jobs. If you have a job, and more than just an entry-level job, if you have a good job that allows you to have dignity, have self-worth, support your family, the chances of reoffending and coming back into the system go down dramatically. So we're talking with employers, we're talking with industry trade groups, we're talking with anybody that would like to talk to us, so that we can craft, and that's an appropriate word, we are crafting training programs. So what a typical student of ours looks like, somewhere between release and 3 or 4 years, because number one, we want it to be just-in-time training, number two, we want it to be current, and number three, we want to know that you're going back into society. So somewhere around the 2 to 3 year, we'll enter you in a program based on your aptitude, your interest, current market demands, and train you, equip you with skills to help keep you from coming back and being our guest again.
Now, how important is also kind of nurturing any entrepreneurs that are in there?
It's very important. We're looking to establish a partnership with Atlanta Technical College right here in the metro area for an entrepreneurial class, because in many cases, we've seen success stories where because some businesses or some employers was a little bit reluctant to hire someone, they've started their own businesses and been very successful. In fact, hiring some other ex-offenders. So we've seen some successes there.
I mean, you could argue that if someone's in the drug selling business or a gang, that is a business of their entrepreneurs in their own way.
Yes.
And so they're utilizing some of the skills and traits, I mean, maybe in a to the dark side, but they're still using some of the entrepreneurial traits.
They are, and we're hopefully not training them to be drug dealers. We're hoping,
right? But you're trying to transfer that to say, look,
yes,
you can use some of those same skills, except do it for the good, and then you don't have to worry about being arrested and looking over your shoulder constantly.
Exactly. We have a relatively large population to work with, slightly over 50,000 inmates. We release somewhere in the neighborhood of 10,000 a year. They come back to my neighborhood and your neighborhood and all of our neighborhoods. And the way we keep ourselves safe, our family safe, and our possessions safe are to invest in programs that help them come back as law-abiding, productive citizens.
And if somebody, what are some of the partners that you have? You mentioned some of the colleges that you work with. Are there other partners?
There are, and we're delighted with the quality of our partners. We could not do it without our partners. A lot of the technical college system of Georgia partners, primarily Central Georgia Technical College, Wiregrass Georgia Technical College, they're two of our biggest partners. We also partner with the University System of Georgia. The University of Georgia, we have a beekeeping program. We have a landscaping program, horticulture, recycling. We partner with Georgia Tech. We're setting up a Braille program down in our small female prison in South Georgia. And Braille is a particularly good skill to take with you when you're released because there are a lot of people that need Braille textbooks, and that's one of the primary demands for everything from pre-K right on up through college.
And then do you have any stories that you can share, maybe success stories that somebody went through this program and is now making a difference in their community?
Of course. In the class of our first graduate, it's on our website on the Department of Corrections, but the honor graduate in the welding program, spoke, and in fact, Governor Deal was on the way back from a trade mission, and they streamed the video to him. But the message he had was, I want the Governor Deal to know, and I want the General Assembly who funded this to know that if it's not successful with anyone but me, that it's going to be successful with this one guy. I don't ever plan to come back. I have a lot of living to make up for. This man went in prison when his son was a baby. By the time he got out, the boy was a teenager. And he now is one of our best ambassadors. He speaks to church, civic groups. He speaks at probation centers where people are getting ready to come back and say, you know, I could do it. You can do it too. Here's some of the challenges that I faced. Here's some of the things I overcame. So we've got several really good success stories about people changing and inventing themselves. And it's been a super encore career for me to be able to be a part of that. I didn't like retirement. I retired after a long, long career. And if you can't believe it, I didn't like it. So I've been working on this for about 3 years, and it's been a fun, exciting, productive encore career.
And if somebody wanted to learn more about the program, is there a website?
There is. There are two websites, in fact. We have our Department of Corrections website. That's www.decor, as in Department of Corrections, .state.ga.us. And we also have a Facebook page, and that's www.facebook.com/Georgia Corrections. And both of those have lots of interesting stories, lots of interesting photos. It's interesting when you see the creativity and the excitement at our female prison up at Arundale State Prison in Alto in Habersham County. The beehives aren't just regular old standard beehives. They're painted colors, pink. They got flowers. They've got stars, suns, moons. It's really exciting to go back and see how creative those women are with decorating their beehives.
And if you're a company out there that wants to partner and need employees, this is probably a good opportunity for companies, right?
This is an excellent opportunity because you're in the driver's seat. We want to design a curriculum just for you. So you get to approve the curriculum. So while we have them, we're training exactly the things you want them to be trained in. And then no guarantee, just like any other employee upon release, you get to consider them just like you would any
right.
other. A lot of employers have found that they like hiring ex-offenders for the same reason they like hiring veterans. They're accustomed to structure. They're accustomed to following orders. They're accustomed to discipline, doing what they're told, when they're told, how to do it. We have a lot of good success stories, and anybody that's interested in working with us and letting us craft a program just for you, I'd be delighted to talk with you. You can find my information on the Department of Corrections website, and be delighted to have a conversation with you.
Good stuff. Well, thank you so much for being part of the show today.
Thank you.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Katie Galley. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.